Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. Pro-life open forum today with Trent Horn. Lots of folks on the line, so we are going to move with alacrity through the calls. 888-318-7884 is the number if you would like to get in on this open forum. Pro-life open forum means if you got any questions about your culture of life type questions or arguments having to do with protecting, defending, and appreciating, and loving, and caring for, and in some cases, tolerating human life, just call that number. We'd love to talk about it with you, whether you are pro-life or not. 888-318-7884. Trent, as I said, lots and lots of calls. Shall we just head right back to the phones?
Sure, let's do it.
All right, let us go then to Jill in New Jersey, watching on Facebook Live. Jill, thanks so much for joining us. Your question for Trent Horn.
Hi, thanks so much for taking my call. Trent, my pro-life question is in the context of a woman, a sexually active woman who has hormonal imbalance, and her choice of whether or not to use hormonal contraception to suppress her cycle in order to get relief from symptoms. When I talk to people about the abortifacient potential of the pill and the fact that that makes it not licit, very faithful Catholics are quoting very well-known pro-life doctors and theologians who are saying, well, the contraceptive effect is secondary, and so therefore it is illicit use of a medication if they so you choose to use it. Some pro-life doctors will go so far to say that somehow you can plan a periodic abstinence period to cover the potential time of conception. And there just seems to be, just right within our own faith, a lot of confusion on something that's quite important, because we have a lot of women who are suffering, yet this abortifacient effect is just terrible.
Sure. And I would say, Jill, that in every one of these cases, it's difficult for me to give a complete answer because every individual case is different. And some of these things can be tricky based on what medications are being used and what the reasons are that are involved. I would say that when it comes to the use of the pill in this case, or hormonal contraceptives, there are two issues here that we have to discuss. First would be the question of whether the pill is an abortifacient and whether you are doing something that is resulting in the death of an unborn child, and so you would be morally culpable for that act. And then two, whether it is engaging in the sin of contraception, which itself, that even if it weren't causing the death of an unborn child, you might be engaging – are you engaging in the sin of contraception? So we always have to understand that in Catholic moral theology, there's the principle of double effect. So the principle of double effect holds that an action can have more than one effect, a good and a bad effect. And so some actions that have bad effects can be tolerated if they're good or at least morally neutral. The good effect outweighs the bad effect. The bad effect is not the means of achieving the good effect. And there's a proportional or a just reason for engaging the act because of how serious the bad effect is. So when it comes, so to take another example, if someone is pregnant but they have a fast-acting uterine cancer, they might need a hysterectomy to save their life or to use chemotherapy, and that could cause the death of a child. But here it would be licit under double effect because chemotherapy or hysterectomies for medical reasons are morally good or neutral. The good effect of saving a mother's life is not caused by the bad effect of the child's life being lost. If the child could survive, we would rejoice, certainly. But here, that's not, it's not intended. The bad effect can't be intended, and it also can't be the means through which you achieve the good effect. So that's one example. So then when we go back to using the pill, we would say, well, what's going on here? You are taking in hormones to correct some kind of a hormonal imbalance. If that is just what the act is, then it's morally neutral or morally good. It would not be okay. It would not be okay to engage in contraception or a direct act of sterilization, even to procure some good effect, such as to prevent a health problem later down the road. So sterilizing, like doing a salpingectomy, you know, removing part of the fallopian tube. But here you're taking hormones to relieve some kind of hormonal imbalance. And that has the good effect of restoring the hormones where they're supposed to be. But that can also have some bad effects. It might have the bad effect of preventing a child from implanting in the uterus. And I will say to you that we're not entirely sure how much hormonal contraception, people might push back at me against this, but we're not entirely sure as to what effect the birth control pill has on preventing implantation. We're not even sure as much with emergency contraception how much that occurs. It's difficult to study. It may also be the case that even if it's indirect, it could still be tolerated. There are studies that indicate that breastfeeding could cause a reduction in the lining of the uterus and prevent a child from implanting, which is why women, which might explain one reason why women who breastfeed do not tend to get pregnant. Not only stops their cycle, it may also thin the lining of the uterus and prevent implantation from occurring if there's a breakthrough ovulation. But here we would never say that breastfeeding was immoral because it led to a child being failing to implant. It's not our intention to kill the child. That's just that's a foreseen but unintended bad effect that's outweighed by the good effect, which is in that case nourishing a child with breast milk or reducing a hormonal imbalance. So I don't think the objection from a possible abortifacient act of the birth control pill would negate its valid or licit medical use. Now, there's always different circumstances where people are saying they're using it for hormonal imbalance, but their real primary intention is to not get pregnant. And that, I think, would show that it's really more an act of contraception with the hormonal imbalance as a side effect. That would be wrong. So I would say here that if a doctor has prescribed medicine for a particular pathology in the body and it causes sterilization or even a child to die unintentionally, if that is the result of a medically licit procedure, then it would still be moral. So if you have more questions about that, or our listeners have more questions about a specific case, I would recommend the National Catholic Bioethics Center, ncbcenter.org. May be helpful in that regard. They have some work on this. My last point, Jill, I don't mean to drone on and on, and if you have any questions, I'm happy to entertain them, is that I'm very skeptical about doctors prescribing hormonal contraceptives to treat things like hormone imbalances, because many times here, that is not addressing the medical problem itself. It's really masking the symptoms. That there are other means of doing hormone or even dietary treatment. I have found people who have hormone imbalances that have gone under dietary regimens, and things have completely changed for them. So I think a lot of doctors, Jill, want to just promote birth control in these cases because it's all they know, and they think it's an added bonus that if you don't get pregnant, you're less likely to have health problems down the line or things like that. So I'm very skeptical as a practical concern of using hormonal contraceptives for these kinds of situations. But if you were given a medicine that treated these problems that caused sterility or prevented implantation as a side effect, it could still be moral if you merely foresee that is happening and you don't positively intend it. I threw a lot out at there, you. It's a thorny issue, but is that a helpful start?
A lot of people who will disagree, so I appreciate having a resource as well.
Well, and you know what? If I get emails on it, if you disagree with me, that's fine. I'm happy to engage that. And maybe I might offer it up as an episode of my podcast at trenhornpodcast.com or maybe an article for Catholic Answers Online Magazine. But we do know that there are cases where you can use medicine and it has a side effect of sterility, or possibly a procedure to help someone, to help a woman, could have a side effect of a child's death in utero. It's valid and listed in those cases. And I believe it could also be applied in some instances of maintaining a woman's hormonal imbalance, even if it causes those other side effects. But a lot more could be get into on that. I hope that's helpful. And maybe I'll address it more at length in a future podcast at trenhornpodcast.com.
Thanks, Jill. We appreciate the call. It is a pro-life open forum today here on Catholic Answers Live. Trent Horn is our guest. I was just thumbing through again the Catholic Answers November-December issue with all the articles on Christmas and virgin birth and the nativity symbols and all that kind of thing. Plus, there's a bunch of other stuff in there. Does the soul survive death? And there's an article by Matt Frad Dawkins I have not read the article, but I'm guessing that would be Richard Dawkins versus Aquinas. I'm guessing that's Thomas Aquinas. I hope I have the two fellows right.
It could also be Jim Aquinas' brother.
Jim Aquinas.
His lesser known brother, Jim.
And Skip Dawkins. The barber.
Right.
This is what you get at Catholic Answers Magazine. Just unbelievable good stuff. I truly believe it's one of the best Catholic magazines in print in the world, and I wish you would get it. It makes a great gift as well. You can find out all about Catholic Answers Magazine just by going to the website, CatholicAnswersMagazine.com. catholicanswers.com.
Catch Catholic Answers live anytime at catholic.com.
The leading Catholic voices are on EWTN Radio.
I would describe myself as a revert, and ever since I came back to a practice of my faith, I started praying the rosary, going to even daily mass, God has led me on an amazing journey and used me in a lot of incredible ways that I never dreamed would have been possible, and I'm just so grateful to God for all of his gifts and blessings in my life.
Take Two with Jerry and Debbie, tomorrow, noon Eastern, on EWTN Radio.
Are you a coffee drinker? If so, you can now enjoy a coffee roasted to perfection by the Carmelite Monks of Wyoming. Delicious Mystic Monk coffee is roasted and prepared by monks in a hidden cloistered monastery and is available in over 25 varieties. All Mystic Monk coffees are works of perfection and labors of love. For more information on how to purchase Mystic Monk coffee, visit mysticmonkcoffee.com. That's mysticmonkcoffee.com.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live. I'm Cy Kellett, your host. Trent Horn is our guest. Trent is the author of many books, several of them very good.
Several very good. The others extremely good.
Oh, okay, good. I'm glad you. Among them is Persuasive Pro-Life, How to Talk About Our Culture's Toughest Issues. Father Frank Provone wrote the foreword to that one. And so we're talking pro-life stuff on this pro-life open forum. We go now to Jimmy in Westville, Virginia, listening on 89.7 FM. Jimmy, so happy to have you here with us. Your question for Trent.
Hey, thank you, gentlemen, for taking my call. I have a question. If all these people that are pro-life, how many children do you guys foster or have adopted to alleviate the problem? With 7.2 billion people on this planet, I think that abortion and contraception is good for society. And I think it's, you're crossing dangerous territory when, you know, man has the, or they think they have the right to tell a woman what she can do with her body. What is your input on that?
Okay, so you're wondering, a question for me in particular, how many children have I adopted?
And or fostered to alleviate the problem in society with all these children that are in foster care and in need of adoption?
Well, I haven't adopted any, but I don't see how it's relevant at all to the question of whether it's okay to kill a human being in the womb through abortion. So let's just assume I'm a very, very bad person, that I don't like children. Actually, if anyone knows me, I very much like children. Ever since having children, I see the world a lot more from their perspective.
I don't find they like you that much. I mean, maybe your own do, but other.
Yeah, maybe.
Sorry.
Or children at heart, like my co-host, Cy Kellett.
I'll go back to being quiet. Yes. I like you, Trent.
Cy, go play with your blocks in the corner,
all right,
please.
Okay.
So let's say I don't like children, or I hate children, or I'm mean to children. How does that fact that, let's say I'm a really bad person, Jimmy. Let's say I, Trent Horn, am a terrible, terrible person. How does that change the fact that abortion unjustly ends the life of a human being? How would me being a selfish, bad person who's never adopted anyone, how does that change the fact that abortion unjustly takes the life of a human being before they're born? How does that change it?
Well, it doesn't change it. It's just that you're going to help with the situation that the problem is with all these children that are in need of foster care or adoption.
Well, how about all these kids that are in foster care? Why don't we just kill them?
That would be murder because they're already born. They already came out of the womb.
Why is
being a human being?
Okay, well, let me ask you another question then. Why is it okay to kill a human being before he is born, but not after he's born?
Because that's a woman's right to choose. I don't think anybody has the right to tell a woman what she can do with her body.
Why?
That's her body. I'll give you an example. God created everybody not in a lab. He didn't get in a lab. So when you go to a doctor, they push these pills and pills when the answer is in nature. So they have certain plants that are illegal that you're not allowed to take,
okay,
and it comes from nature.
All right.
So when it's the same, is almost the equivalent to a man telling or the government telling a woman what she can and cannot do with her body. I think that's dangerous.
Is an unborn baby a literal part of a woman's body, or is the baby, do they have their own body?
Oh, it's part of the woman's body.
What part?
The the uterus. The
baby,
the
baby is the uterus?
No, the baby is not the uterus.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question. If the baby is a part of a woman's body, Jimmy, how many brains does a pregnant woman have?
One.
Well, wait a minute.
A pregnant woman would have to do two.
Oh, a pregnant woman has two brains. How many?
Yeah, she had one for herself and the one that's forming inside her inside her womb. And I get what you're going, sir. But the thing is the fact that
I don't think you quite get it. Let me try again. How many male pieces of genitalia do women have?
None.
Okay, so if a pregnant woman has a boy fetus inside of her, she would have none or one?
Okay, one, if you wanted, yeah, one.
Okay, I think you can see, Jimmy, that this is very nonsensical here. That the unborn child, how could it be a part of a woman's body? I agree with you, the child is inside of the woman's body. It's growing. But you end up, if you really truly believe the unborn child is a part of a woman's body, then you end up believing just these very nonsensical things like a person can have two brains, women can have male genitalia, which unfortunately many people believe that nonsense today even. That you believe all that it seems like your argument, you're reflexively embracing that because you think that basically because a woman has power over herself, she can exert that power in any way she wants over the human being in her womb. Is that your position?
That's correct, because that's her body.
So
that is her body.
What is a fetus?
An unborn child.
Okay, so what do we call it when a person can treat a child however they want, including kill the child?
When it's already born, is that what you're saying?
I'm just saying, what is it called when you can treat a child or a human being however you want? You can own them. You can do whatever you want with them. What do we call that?
Slavery?
Yeah, so it sounds like to me, if you're saying that a fetus is an unborn child and a woman can do whatever she wants with a fetus, including to kill it, you are advocating for a modern form of slavery.
I'm not advocating for that. I'm just advocating for the woman's right to choose.
Right to choose what?
Regardless of the circumstances. We always going to have everybody,
Jimmy,
especially men, are going
to
have
Jimmy, right to choose. Right to choose what?
Right to choose to do what she wants with her body.
And so
whether she wants to.
For the right to choose to have an abortion, right?
Yes.
And what is abortion?
The termination of a pregnancy.
What is a pregnancy?
A fetus that's developing inside a woman's womb.
Okay, and you already said a fetus is an unborn child, right?
That's correct.
So what you're arguing for is the right of a woman to terminate her unborn child.
Shall she choose? Yes.
So by terminate, you mean kill?
However you want to word it, it's a yes.
Okay, so our listeners can just put that together. I am arguing for the position all human beings are equal and that we should protect the right to life of all humans, and your position is just women should be allowed to kill children. I think that's a fair description. I have carefully defined every single term that we've used, and so I'm just going to have to let those who are listening, they can see which is the more compassionate and civilized position among us. And so I'll let our listeners draw from that. And I think it's quite obvious, the one that's the view that is not for killing children. So I'll let our listeners decide from there.
Jimmy, thank you so much for that call. It is a pro-life open forum today, 888-318-7884. As difficult as a call like that is to listen to, I'm very happy that Jimmy called.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm happy that you didn't use it as an opportunity to kill me off again.
There's always time.
I've only done it one time this show. Let's go to John in Huntington Beach, California, listening on the Catholic Answers app. John, thanks for downloading the app onto your phone. Your question for Trent Horn.
Yeah, just first a comment on your last caller. As a listener, I will decide. I don't think it's moral to kill people just because they haven't been born yet. That's ridiculous.
Well, that makes two of us, John. Well, thanks for your input.
Yeah. Thank you, John.
Okay, so now the reason I called, there was some controversy during the Women's March because some of the women that marched had pro-life signs and were told to leave and forced out of the Women's March. It's been kind of a long-standing tradition for the March for Life not to let people from PRAGL, which is the Pro-Life Alliance of Gays and Lesbians, and another very small organization, Atheists Against Abortion, are not allowed to march in the March for Life. At least they weren't. I don't know what the current status of that decision is, but it does seem to me a little bit like, you know, pro-life allowed to march in the Women's March, but yet we're going to do the exact same thing to the Pro-Life Alliance of Gays and Lesbians, which is a pretty large organization with a lot of members and a pretty significant history of fighting for the rights of unborn Americans. So I don't know the current status, but do you, and I guess that's my question, do you know the current status and do you have any comments on it?
In the limited amount of research I could do before your call, I remember when this happened back in, I think, 2002. That was back when Nellie Gray was president of the March for Life, and I believe she urged or demanded that members, I think it might be called PlayGal, the Pro-Life Alliance of Gays and Lesbians. I think it's PlayGal, but the self-identified group of people who are pro-life and say they're gay and lesbian, I think Gray asked them to leave the march in 2002. She's no longer the head of that organization. I don't know if she's passed away or not yet. But I don't believe she's not the leader of the organization anymore. I know back in 2013, members of Go Proud, they're Republicans who identify as gay or lesbian, plan to march in the life, and I don't think there was any initiative to stop them. I'm also not aware of atheists being barred from either coast's March for Life. So that's the facts on the ground I can come across. So I don't know. I don't think they're barred. They were barred at one time. I don't think they're barred anymore, but don't quote me on it. My view is this. I think that as long as someone, a group, does not hold a view diametrically opposed to what it means to be pro-life, I think pro-lifers should work with them. So what I define as being pro-life is you are in favor of restoring and protecting the right to life of every human being. And so different pro-lifers, of course, disagree. Outside of that narrow, limited scope, protecting the right to life of all human beings, pro-lifers disagree on a lot. I've known Protestants who won't work with me as a Catholic pro-life advocate in the field, did not want to go and do work with me. One of them even said, why would I go out with you? Why would I want you to save babies when they'll just go to hell anyways if they become Catholic?
Whoa.
Yes, wow. They really did say that. So, and my friend, big testament in, Scott Klusendorf, big mentor of mine, he was with me. So you remember when I debated James White, January 2017, at the G3 conference, giant reformed Calvinist conference. Which is nice if you run a Calvinist conference, because no one can blame you for having low attendance numbers because God ordains everything.
Yeah, it was,
so it was ordained. You can't, you know, that's the way it is. But there's a lot of people there. It's like 1,200.
And it was Scott, double predestined.
Right. And so Scott was there giving a talk, and he gives talks routinely on why Catholics and Protestants have to work together. And Scott is a total five-point Calvinist on this. But he invited me, if I was going to stay the next day, to give the talk with him, even though the night before I had debated James White on eternal security. So there's Protestants who are very, very good about this. But there you'd say, well, let's work together unless we have serious, serious disagreements over a fundamental issue involving the right to life.
Yeah.
Like if you have a group that says, well, we are we're against abortion, but we're okay with euthanasia, that wouldn't work. I wouldn't want them marching because they're not really pro-life. Others, we might have serious theological or even moral differences, but we can work alongside one another to tackle this grave evil that's threatening everyone. So that's probably how I feel about including those who identify as gay or lesbian or identify as an atheist. Now, I may not always, not in every circumstance, I may not, you know, host an event at my church if there's going to be possibility of scandal with a group that might support, you know, critiquing Catholic teaching on something like marriage, for example. But I think if it's a march in a public street, the idea here is we're all getting together in the public square despite our differences for this one goal. I say let them go as long as we agree on the fundamental pro-life essentials.
What do you make of that, John?
Yeah, I think it's kind of a fair thing and maybe something that would be a slow-moving, change. I do think, though, that gays and lesbians have a real purpose in this and could be big allies, as well as atheists. Atheists are probably going to be the group that flip-flops their thinking on this faster than anybody.
Yeah.
That's just my speculation. I don't know what the future actually is going to hold.
Yeah, but and we should reach out to anyone. Reach out to anyone to make them part of the pro-life movement, that we're united in our belief in the equality of every human being, that our goal is as wide as our members, the protection of all human beings.
Yeah, everybody gets to live.
Everybody gets to live.
I think everybody should get to express that sentiment, too, that everybody gets to live. We'll be right back with more Pro-Life Open Forum with Trent Horn on Catholic Answers Live.
Catholic Answers Live.
Advent is upon us and Christmas approaches. Catholic Answers wants you to know about our annual Christmas sale with hundreds of great faith-building resources all on sale at 20% off when you enter the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout. With great new products on doctrine, church history, morality, apologetics, and much more, there's simply no better time to stock up on resources to build up your faith and the faith of those around you. Phone 888-291-8000 or go to shop.catholic.com today to take advantage of what is truly the best Catholic sale on the internet going on now through the end of the year. And remember, enter promo code CALIVE18 at checkout and save 20% on hundreds of great resources throughout the store.
Have you subscribed to the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter? This is Catholic Answers Live host Cy Kellett, and I want to tell you about our new weekly newsletter full of behind-the-scenes information and facts you need to know about the show. It's easy to sign up. Just visit CatholicAnswersLive.com and look for the newsletter sign-up box on the front of the page. It's a great way to keep up to date with what's happening with the show and see what's coming in the days ahead, delivered weekly into your inbox. Sign up today for the Catholic Answers Radio Club newsletter and see what you've been missing. Go to CatholicAnswersLive.com.
Hey everyone, Carlo Broussard here. Are you looking for an on-fire Catholic speaker to come and speak at your conference or parish event? If so, you're in luck. We've got a host of Catholic Answers speakers, including myself, just waiting to get on a plane and come see you. Just go to CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com to get all the information you need to make your event the talk of the town. That's CatholicAnswersSpeakers.com. We look forward to seeing you.
Tomorrow on More to Life, spouse versus spouse. Marriage is never easy, but if marital conflict is getting you down, we've got your back. Now, back to Catholic Answers Live.
Welcome back to Catholic Answers Live, Pro-Life Open Forum. Trent Horn, our guest this hour. Next up on the line, Joe, and I'm going through the calls kind of quick because we've got a lot of people who want to talk to Trent about this pro-life stuff, and we're happy they do. If you're not a pro-life person, you're welcome to call as well. Well, I guess you've noticed that probably, that some of the calls have been from pro-life people, some not. 888-31-TRUTH, the number, 888-31-TRUTH. We go down to Joe in Youngstown, Ohio, listening on 89.5 FM. Joe, you're up with Trent. Your question, please.
Hi, Trent. As the world's biggest moral issue, why doesn't the Pope attend the pro-life rally in the, of course, in the world's most influential country, you know, even if it just saves one life? And my next question is, you know, why isn't there a stronger call from pro-life people for this to take place?
For the Pope to attend the March for Life in Washington?
Yes.
Well, I don't know Pope Francis's travel schedule, because there are all kinds of different countries. If he were to attend a public protest against abortion in the United States, one could ask then, well, why doesn't he attend large kinds of public protests in many other countries, including in Ireland, for example, where abortion just became legal again? It would seem to make sense for him to go to countries that are at at risk of bringing abortion back instead of ones on the cusp of making it illegal. I think that just because the Pope is the head of a worldwide church, that his time and his resources are limited, so he chooses to teach and uses authoritative teaching office to make it clear to the members of that worldwide church and the community of the world at large that abortion just cannot be tolerated. And that is sufficient for him in his teaching office as the pastor of Christ's Universal Church. I don't think it would be, it may not be necessarily a good use of his time for him to attend all of these different events in countries all over the world. Whereas a good use of his time is like when Pope St. John Paul II authoritatively declared that abortion is a grave sin in the Gospel of Life, in that encyclical, for example, using his platform to denounce abortion in his Wednesday addresses and other documents that he puts forward. So I would say that's probably just the reason why he doesn't attend one of these marches. And he may also not want to appear to be getting involved into a debate between political parties within various countries. So that's probably why. But I think that pro-life advocates should go to these events and make their voices known. And we have been doing that. But more so even than going to marches, I will say this. I think it's unfortunate. We always deal with a media blackout with pro-life marches. And it's a part of that is an unfair media portrayal. But the other part is that, you know, if it's the same march year after year, the media says, well, we've covered this every year. It's always the same. It's not really news. So I think it's kind of incumbent on pro-lifers. We got to put our heads together and come up with events that really get people to say, wait, I got to stop and take a look at this, that are unique, that are novel, that are widespread. And in the age of social media, I don't know what that might be. You could see a simple hashtag can start getting people to say about this. So we've got to put our heads together to try to do that. We have to know it's going to be hard. There's going to be media blackouts no matter what we try to do. But we have to keep fighting nonetheless. So I hope that's help answer your question. And I'm grateful you called in.
Thanks, Joe. We go now to Alice, listening from Earth, listening on 89.7 FM. Alice, your question for Trent Horn.
Hello, Trent. This is Alice. Thanks for taking my call. This is great. This is my first time listening to you guys, and I am very impressed.
Thank you.
Kind of like a two-part question. Yeah, I have a two-part kind of question. We're very Catholic, very pro-life, go to the marches, everything. And I don't understand this. In the Catholic schools here in Toledo, Ohio, they have a program called Script. And what Script is, and they're promoting it, I buy a gift card, and this gift card, and this gift card helps, of course, the Catholic school for the tuition. And a lot of these companies on there, like Starbucks, actually give a lot of money to Planned Parenthood. I don't understand why the Catholic schools are promoting these companies that actually give money to Planned Parenthood, and they give me this big ordeal, well, you can choose. No. No, that's like your lily pad thing. No. Simple fact is, a lot of Catholic people out there do not know which companies to help and which companies they don't buy from. And that is my question. Why is this, and where is the list that I can find that I can give money to a charitable contribution to a company that is totally pro-life? And why is all these Catholic schools in Toledo promoting the Script program? Why don't they take those people off the list?
Well, I can't speak to your local program in Toledo about why they do what they do when it comes to donating money. When we donate money to organizations, we always have to remember the principles behind cooperation with evil. In the world we live in, there's a lot of evil. And unless you live in a cave in a mountain somewhere and you don't talk to anybody else, odds are you will cooperate with evil even in some very, very remote way. I mean, you might go to the grocery store or go to a store and buy something, you know, not think twice about it. And that store uses part of those profits and donates them to Planned Parenthood, for example. Are you in sin because of that? No, that's what we would call remote material cooperation. That's something, as long as you're not intending it and it's not essential for the evil act to take place, you're not morally culpable. It would be great if you could shop at places that only support licit and good things, but that would be I think it would be very difficult for anyone to be able to tabulate and research every single store they go to see what they give to or what charities they go to. Now, you can contact, if you're planning to make a gift to a charity, you could contact them and ask, where does this money go? And ask them, does it go to abortion providers? I think that's well worth it to do for particular acts of charitable giving. There are also online, you can search pro-life boycott list. There's not one single list. Pro-lifers assemble different lists of organizations that support abortion facilities. And so you can decide if you want to choose to not support those agencies. But I will say boycotts aren't really the most effective way to get a social message out there unless you can get everybody on board and you can be sustained about it. I mean, during the civil rights movement, it took, I think, years for the Montgomery bus boycotts to make any traction in the city to deal with racial segregation. So a lot of boycotts, I mean, you have the right to do that. You can, I mean, you can spend your money wherever you want. But we're not morally obligated to take part in things like boycotts. You can. I would just say that you should ask a charitable organization you're thinking of giving to, what do they give to? And then try to do your shopping, you know, as best that you can. And to make these suggestions to say, hey, you pick this group. If your child's school is donating to a certain group, like the March of Dimes, for example, and to say, you know, that they support eugenics and Down syndrome diagnosis for abortion, to say, I think that's very sad. And that's not what our school stands for. Can I recommend and pick a charity that has an almost identical goal, yet does not support pro-life, does not support an abortion facility. So I hope that that's helpful for you, and you can check out more resources for that on our website at Catholic.com. But thanks for calling.
Alice, thanks very, very much for that call. Another brilliant pro-life student joins us. We have the Pro-Life Club from Cathedral Catholic High School, which is near us here in San Diego, with us. Your name is?
Cindy.
Cindy, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
Did your brother once intern with us here at Catholic Answers?
Yes.
I know you must be the better of the two siblings.
Five.
Oh, better of five. Oh, you're the best of all five. Okay, happy to hear it. Cindy, you have a question for Trent Horn?
Yeah, so I actually had a conversation just earlier today with a classmate about in vitro fertilization.
Mm-hmm.
And I know there's an argument against it from the church, but I couldn't remember what it was in the moment.
Sure.
So just...
Yeah, let's talk about in vitro fertilization. It does relate to the pro-life movement. So in vitro fertilization is a reproductive technology, for our listeners who don't know, that takes sperm out of a man's body and an egg out of a woman's body and then fertilizes them, causes an embryo to come to exist in a petri dish in a laboratory. That embryo, well, usually causes multiple embryos to be created that are then implanted within the mother's body to develop. Sometimes multiple embryos are implanted and some are aborted in the process. So that's what IVF is. And there's a few different arguments one can make against IVF. Some are practical and others are more principled. From a pro-life perspective, on a practical argument, you can say that this procedure in general results in the death of small human beings. That if a human being comes into existence at fertilization, and we know this from scientific evidence, an embryo is a human being. I mean, the word embryo just refers to a human being from conception until the seventh week of life. We know these are human beings. So they're either destroyed in the laboratory before being implanted or selectively reduced afterwards. The selective reduction is a euphemism. So you might have two or three embryos implanted and then one or two gets aborted later. So you can say practically this procedure itself usually has a grave threat against these very small human beings. So as a pro-lifer, we should not support it. From a principle perspective, you can say that human beings before they're born have a right not just to live, but they have a right to live within the safety of their mother's body. You can ask, should human beings be the product of a gift of love between spouses, or should they be a product or something that's manufactured in a laboratory? We have to ask the question, should a child be begotten or manufactured? You know, that's why we use the term with human beings, procreation rather than reproduction. I think procreation is a much better term. A lot of secular people don't like it, but it's better. Because if you think, like, if you make a, if you take a paper from school, like a flyer, and you put it in a copy machine and you hit copy, did you engage in an act of reproduction or procreation when you made another copy of the flyer?
Reproduction.
Yeah, you wouldn't say, I've procreated another flyer. You've reproduced it. You've made a copy of it. Reproduction is something we think of for objects. You know, we copy them. We reproduce them. We make them again. Procreation is something only among persons. You know, so only people can procreate because they work with God to create, to bring a unique, valuable human being into existence. And that human being has a right not just to live, but a right to live within the safety of his mother's body. And so it's disordered when we take sexuality, which should be a full gift between a husband and wife. It's disordered if you take its two ends, babies and bonding. The marital act is for babies and bonding. If you take away the baby's part and you only have the bonding, you have contraception. You disorder sexuality. IVF is the other way. It's if you take the bonding part out, but you only have the babies. So it's just as disordered. It turns children into a product that we create in a lab when they should never be thought of that way. They should just be a gift between spouses. Because here's the thing. A lot of people say, well, why not? What about married couples who are infertile? Shouldn't they get to have a child? Mm-hmm. A child is not a thing we get to have. You know, it's not an object that I get to have to make me happy. It is a gift God blesses us with. Some of us are not blessed with that gift. But when we stop looking at a child like a gift and see a child as something I have a right to a child, I mean, does someone have a right to you? A right to me? You can't have a right to another human being. You can have a right to get married and maybe have a human being, maybe procreate. But you don't have a right to another person to fulfill your own needs. So if we put it in that way and show that that becomes disordered, that it doesn't stop at just a married couple using IVF to have a baby, then why can't a single person use IVF? I know a story about an unemployed mailman who lives at home with his parents. He's 50 years old, who used IVF and a surrogate to have three triplets brought to his house for him to raise. And he's in no position to raise them. He basically purchased these children, and he's not related to them in any way. But if you support IVF, that's the natural thing you get to because you've already turned children into a product. Children should be something that's a gift between the spouses that if you're blessed with them come 9 months later, not something that can arrive on Amazon Prime. So does that kind of make sense?
Yeah, that helps.
Okay, good. Well, I'm glad to help you with that.
Cindy, thanks very, very much. Is this Pro-Life Club new? Has it been around for a while?
It started in 2016. It was my freshman year.
Uh-huh. And do you have any does it take bravery to be part of that group? Because I can't imagine that everybody is like, oh, that's the greatest club to belong to.
Yeah.
So am I right about that?
Yeah.
Where do you get the guts to stand up in support of the right of everybody to live their life?
Honestly, part of it is that the club is just so fun.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Is that Miss Laporte or Mrs. Laporte?
Miss Laporte
yeah. is the coordinator of the group. And she's a math teacher, right?
Yes.
God bless her. God bless her. Thanks, Miss Laporte. I don't know where she is. She has abandoned you all. You've all been left here at Catholic Answers. All right, Cindy, we got to take a break. Thanks very much for that question. I got to let you know that today and tomorrow only we're offering free shipping in the continental U.S. on Trent's blockbuster book, Why We're Catholic. So go ahead and order yours today. Just today and tomorrow, free shipping. All our digital products are also on sale, 50% off all week long, ebooks, e-magazines, and MP3s. And you can save money on hundreds of other items in our shop. Just enter the promo code CALIVE18 at checkout when you visit shop.catholic.com to save 30% on hundreds of books, DVDs, CDs, and other stuffs. CALIVE18 at shop.catholic.com. Thanks, Cindy.
Got questions? Visit us today at catholic.com.
EWTN, helping people grow in their love and understanding of God.
I get up in the morning, I turn the radio on, listen to the Mass, listen to the early shows. I transition to my automobile, I flip it over on my iPhone, then start listening to it on the web. And then when I get in the car, I actually listen to it all the way to work. When I get to work, I actually even listen to it online while I'm sitting at my desk. I just love EWTN.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic. We have a big problem. Our culture is dying, and souls are in danger of being lost. The answer is conversion to Jesus Christ in His church. St. Paul Street Evangelization is a Catholic organization, and we have hundreds of teams spreading the good news throughout the country. But we need your help. The harvest is great, but the laborers are few. Find out more and get involved today at streetevangelization.com. That's streetevangelization.com.
Back to Catholic Answers Live, pro-life open forum today, our regular open forum tomorrow. So tomorrow, if you have any question on the Catholic faith at all, you're welcome to call 888-318-7884. We'll spend 2 hours on open forum tomorrow. Pro-life open forum means we stay on the pro-life topic, but anybody can call with any question at all, whether you're a pro-life person or not. We go now to Frank in Victorville, California, listening to EWTN on Sirius XM satellite radio channel 130. Frank, your question for Trent.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm a cradle Catholic, and I am certainly pro-life. I think life is so important. But as I read Scripture and I go back, I think about when Moses was born and the whole story about the basket and being raised by the Egyptians. There were babies being killed back then. That's why he was in that situation. When I think Christ was born, they were told to go to Egypt, and the Romans sent soldiers in because they didn't want this new king to survive, and they killed babies.
Correct.
And that was wrong. And I go back to when Moses led the Jews out of Egypt, there were... I lost my train of thought.
Talking about at Passover, the final plague before Passover, before Pharaoh let the Hebrews go, was the death of the firstborn in Egypt.
Yes, and I'm certainly not suggesting that God could do anything wrong,
sure.
Of course. I don't want to offend God, but my mind is not his mind. But yeah, the first thing that happens is, or the tenth thing that happens,
yes.
Is those children are killed, yeah. Innocent children. And I don't understand that, so I struggle with that a little bit,
yeah.
Trying to reconcile that. So I would appreciate your comments.
Sure, I'd be happy to do that. I think when we read in, then some people who are pro-choice throw this objection out. They say, well, God is not pro-life. In fact, in my debate with Dan Barker at the University of Minnesota State University in Mankato, Dan threw out all these objections to the Old Testament. And one of them was God is not pro-life because, you know, he ended the lives of the firstborn in Egypt. Although if you think about it, the firstborn were probably actually older children and adults. You know, a lot of the firstborn in a family tend to be the older children.
As a matter of fact, they're always the oldest child.
Right. Yes, they are.
That's a universal law.
They are the firstborn in a family is almost always the oldest child, unless you have time travel, gravitational dilation, or what have you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but how can God, I'm not allowed to kill people, but God's allowed to kill people. I don't get it. Well, we can't think of God as just another person like us who happens to have phantasmic cosmic powers. We have to remember that God is the infinite source of life itself. God is just perfect being itself. None of us would exist without God. So we have to remember that life is ultimately a gift from God to every one of us. And so if life is a gift from God, he can choose to give us however much or however little life he wants to. And he has the right to do that because life is his gift. He's not obligated. If he causes me to come into existence, he's blessed me with 33 years of life. He's not obligated to give me 34, 35, or any more years. He's not obligated to give me one extra day after today. Who knows? He might not. I don't know. But if he were to take my life now, it would not be an injustice. If he were to take Cy Kellett's life right now. Oh. See, I did not kill you. God did that.
No.
But if
All
he
right.
ended your life, he gave you that, the blessing of life he gave you,
yep.
But it could be even earlier. Could be 10 years of life, 5 years of life, 1 year of life, whatever it may be. And we have to, of course, remember that when God ends someone's life, they do not go permanently out of existence. They end their mortal life and then have the possibility to enter into eternal life with God. So the time we have here in this earthly life is just a gift from him to give at his discretion. He has that authority. We don't. So it's like kind of like when people say in bioethics or IVF or experimentation, you know, you shouldn't play God. Like when we say, you know, hey, you shouldn't play God with people's lives. Well, that assumes, you and I can't play God, but certainly God can play himself. Certainly God can decide these things. So even people have a distinct notion that, I get that. God can do things that we can't. To make an analogy, and this is a very rough analogy, so we can't take it too literally. I don't want it to sound insensitive. But if I was to give a gift to, a gift to my 2-year-old, to my 2-year-old, I could choose to take that gift back if I feel like I have a better gift for him, or he can't have that anymore. Some gifts are given. They're not always permanent. And when there's a greater disparity between the person who gives the gift and receives it, you have more authority to do that. Like if I took back the Christmas gift, I get you, Cy, as colleagues, that would be not a great thing to do because we are equals, are we not?
Close
to it
in some ways.
In some ways,
equals, yes.
But with a child, you have a lot more latitude to be able to do that. I could give a gift to a 2-year-old, but then take it back for their own good. Yeah. But just because I could take the gift from him doesn't mean his 4-year-old older brother could come along and say, "I'm taking this gift from you, Thomas."
Oh yeah.
Just because I can do it doesn't mean he gets the authority. Maybe under very limited circumstances he could, like if Thomas is going to really hurt himself with it.
Yeah.
So it's similar with human beings that only under very limited circumstances can we take the gift of life, like in killing in self-defense, for example. But generally, only God has that right to take that gift of life back, not us. So I gave a bit of an explanation there, but Frank, is that a helpful way to clear it up a little?
It does. It does. I can't assume that they were all babies. You're right. But it was still alive. So, that does help. I mean, God can create life. He can take life.
It's like with Job.
Would that apply also to soldiers?
Mm-hmm. Would it apply to soldiers? Right. So killing in self-defense or killing in just war would be justified. But there's still laws of war. You can't directly kill civilians. You can't, if someone is on their knees and their hands are on their head and they surrender, you can't just shoot them in the head. You know, that would be an unjust violation of the laws of war, the principles of just war and the teaching of the church. So, under limited circumstances, human beings have the authority to take human life. But we do not have anywhere near the authority that God does, because God is the ultimate author of human life. So like what in the book of Job, when Job lost his health, he lost his property, then he lost his children, he lost his family. And he said, what did he say? He said, "The Lord giveth and the Lord taketh away." And so praise be the Lord our God. And that's what sometimes God will give us many blessings, and sometimes he will give us tears by taking things away. But always the Lord gives, the Lord takes away. Blessed be the name of the Lord.
Frank, thanks very much for the call. I want to get to Bill in Modesto, California, watching on YouTube before we go. Bill, it's got to be kind of quick, real quick with your question, please.
Okay, I will. I've been voting since Reagan's second term, so it tells you how old I am. But that's in the last 36 years, including Trump, Roe versus Wade hasn't been overturned. With all these judges we got in there, how can we overturn this? I mean, our vote seems like it means nothing now.
Well, you're not allowed to vote on it currently.
So. Well, it depends. Right now, laws that ban abortion are unconstitutional. So even if a law were to be passed that restricts abortion in a significant way, it would likely be struck down by the courts. If it was struck down, then hopefully the law would be appealed. And hopefully it would reach the Supreme Court. And given that the Supreme Court has changed its makeup in the past few years, it's possible there's a majority of justices who would see a trend and a legal precedent to reverse Roe versus Wade, just as other cases have been reversed in the past. For example, on the other side, in 1986, the Supreme Court said that sodomy laws are constitutional. In 1986, you could ban sodomy. Then in 2003, in Lawrence v. Texas, they said, never mind, you can't do that. Yeah. And I think part of that is public opinion changed. So one thing we can do is try to work to vote for laws that may reach the Supreme Court. But we also have to work at the local level to be able to educate people and change hearts and minds so that as culture changes, sometimes the court follows with that. So it's just going to be a long fight. But it took 400 years to end slavery. And we're still dealing with the after effects of that. It may take a long time to end abortion, but we have to keep fighting.
Bill, thanks so much. You did make a question quick, and I appreciate it. If you're interested in Trent Horn's pro-life writings, well, you can get his book, Persuasive Pro-Life. And if you just like to you know, have more Trent Horn in your life, you can go to TrentHornPodcast.com. He is a hard worker. You are going to get lots for your time. And if you become a supporter of the podcast, for your money, TrentHornPodcast.com. Thanks, Trent, very much.
Thank you, Si.
We'll see you next time. Open forum, like totally open forum. Any question about the Catholic faith at all is welcome tomorrow on Catholic Answers Live.